Welcome back to the Hemingway List. I've got a new opening line for you, courtesy of Right Way Up. Welcome to the Hemingway List. Welcome Hemingway listeners. Oh, listeners. That's pretty clever. Welcome Hemingway listeners to the number one podcast about the Hemingway List. Welcome indeed to the wrap-up episode of Stephen Crane's The Open Boat. We will be discussing Chapter 7, the last chapter, and also the whole story. The questions I asked the community were, do you think the captain made the right call not waiting any longer? What was your favourite moment of this chapter? What were your first thoughts after you finished the story? And who was your favourite character? Plus some general questions. What were your general thoughts on this story, the first story in the Hemingway List? Why do you think Hemingway included this story on his must-reads list? And what do you think Hemingway learned from this story? I can see why Stephen Crane would have been an influence, maybe even a bit of an idol for Hemingway. When you look at how the man lived, I looked at his Wikipedia page and he was sort of a man of adventure, a man of kind of a man's man, you know, in that old-fashioned way that Hemingway was as well. Hemingway liked bullfighting, going to war, that kind of thing. He wasn't one of those sort of bohemian, soft, sort of delicate writers. He was very much like a tough, firm character. But whimsical, of course, and very, very creative. And when reading Stephen Crane's Wikipedia page, which I read a little bit of today, I could definitely see some similarities in character there. So here's something cool that Lipstick Singularity shared. And obviously this podcast is going to contain spoilers for The Open Boat. I should say that up front. But it is confirmed Stephen Crane's real life relates to The Open Boat. The Open Boat, in other words, is a true story. Lipstick Singularity said, to those like me who went in without any previous context for this author, a friendly heads up that Stephen Crane's Wikipedia page is quite a read. Yeah, it really is. I had assumed The Open Boat was a work of fiction, but apparently it was based on his real-life experience of being aboard the SS Commodore when the ship sank. This was probably obvious to everyone but me, but he is the correspondent. Mind blown. So, there you go. It also seems that the story follows the events quite closely. He was indeed in the last ship to leave the Commodore, which apparently had a crew of about 27, I think it said. And he was in the last ship, a tiny little dinghy, with four others. One of them was the captain, one of them was the boiler, one of them was the cook, and indeed the boiler did drown when they tried to get onto the shore. And it really played out exactly as it did in the book. They had trouble getting to the shore, they ended up staying out another night on the water, all the rest. So, that's pretty exciting to learn. Thank you very much, Lipstick Singularity, for pointing that out. Tech-rific said, the strength and willpower of the captain struck me in this final chapter. Putting the other men first, doing his duty whilst being injured and fatigued, is impressive. He musters his final willpower to ensure that the others are saved before him, possibly even doing a little mental triage when he indicates to the naked man to rescue the correspondent before him or Billy. Did he see that Billy was worse off? It's unclear. The cook was saved, and it turned out that he was the cook that we often imagined. A little on the heavy side, talkative, all in all a happy fellow. This story was so realistic and visceral to the senses. At times, I felt I really was in that boat, feeling the cold and the despair of the crew. Living up north as I do helped, but still the prose took me there, by small, unassuming means. And that is perhaps the lesson for writers here. No need for invectives to convey the panic and confusion. No need for more descriptions than necessary. The style is forward-looking, moving on at a steady, unrelenting pace, and I had to stop myself several times from reading on once the chapter was done. Like Ander, I too had a feeling that naming only one of the characters was foreboding. Billy felt real, youthful, and full of life. So the end is all the more strongly felt, and the loss more bitter. I had never read a word of Crane's before, so this was a real discovery of a talented short story writer. Those are far and few between, at least to me. It's an art form not easily mastered and seldom published these days. Yeah, I agree, 100%. Good short stories are hard to come by, and this was a really good one. This is up there with my favourites, for sure. And, you know, it's a bit hard to tell sometimes, because this community and the A Year of War and Peace community really skews your perception on these works, because I just think you get so much more enjoyment reading them this way, with a big group of people to pick them apart and unravel the words and find the deeper meanings. And that slow pace, although it can be tempting to read forward, when you do finish the book, it kind of just feels like you've lived with it. You know, because you could have finished this story in, I don't know, half an hour maybe. It's not very long at all. So, but how much would have kind of been forgotten by the end if you just read the whole thing in one sitting? I think you would forget quite a lot. Whereas this way, it's almost like you retain every little detail. It's a really satisfying way to read. I didn't want to say I told you so, but I totally picked it about that one character being named, being foreboding. Pretty proud of myself for that one. Although, maybe that was obvious. Maybe a lot of people picked the same thing. G. Khan said, "Considering that they have been without rest and adequate resources for survival, I think the captain made the right decision to go back to the shore. They had a sliver of hope when they saw people on the beach, but after a certain time of waiting, hoping for help, they needed to take their own fate in their own hands." I liked the correspondent's jump into the water and the depiction of the cold. Crane actually made me feel cold in just one paragraph. Combined with the knowledge that Crane actually was the correspondent, the sentence, "This appeared to his dazed mind as a fact important enough to be noted at the time," made much more sense. In a very direct fashion, we got that the water was cold. I had hope for all of them surviving. I was sad to see that Billy, the only named character, did not make it. I thoroughly enjoyed the story. I am not accustomed to reading short stories, and I usually like to immerse myself in a book or a series of books with detailed backgrounds and a variety of different characters and settings. I surprisingly liked not knowing the prior events, what happened to their ship, how the four of them ended up on the same dinghy, what relations they had with each other. We are in the moment, nature versus men, survival versus death, just one glimpse into their lives in its hardest, worst, and for the oiler, last moments. After reading The Open Boat, I am more compelled to try out more short stories. I am open to suggestions. Also, congrats to everyone that made it this far. Swim said the Mama Fishy said, "I suggest reading the stories of John Cheever." Alright. T.C. Boyle is himself a master of the short story form, so you might want to check him out. Thanks for the suggestion. That'll be a good thing to do, get some short story suggestions going in the comments. Apparently there's one anthology called Nine Stories by J.D. Salinger. Every single story in the book is incredible. I highly recommend it. Thank you, Laura Y. Stitch, for the recommendation. Ernie Pook said, "This was a great story. I really enjoyed the idiot waving his coat and the running commentary on him. I think that style of humour was quite ahead of its time." There was a lot of humour in this story, which, yeah, it does seem ahead of its time. Lipstick Singularity also said this, "I particularly enjoyed the sequence of events that Crane chose when unfolding the outcome. In a typical Hollywood story arc, it might have been something like, 1, stuck in a boat, 2, swim for it, 3, somebody dies, dramatic climax. 4, but hooray, everyone else is saved. Story ends on a happy note. I like that Crane teases us with a happy ending to the story, but then pulls the rug out from under us by revealing that not everyone made it. 1, stuck in a boat. 2, swim for it. 3, hooray, we are on the sand. 4, but not everyone made it. I think this leaves us on a much more serious note and gives the entirety of the story a much heavier weight that sticks with you. It also gives the reader the opportunity to experience it like the surviving characters did, rather than as an omnipotent observer. Their own initial elation at being alive and then realizing that their crewmate didn't achieve the same fate. The heaviness of realizing that the oiler's fate could have easily been their own. In my opinion, this is what gives the story a more lasting impact. My emotional state at the end of the reading was not a feeling of resolution, but instead of gratitude and sadness. Laura Y. Stitch said, yeah, plus there's hardly any attention drawn to the fact that one person didn't make it. It's like the tragedy was too much for him and he didn't want to dwell on it. Long String of Numbers said, it seems to me like that is intentional since its completeness, since it complements the correspondent's thoughts of how indifferent nature is to whether men live or die because of it. The death is merely described as a simple fact, almost not worth mentioning, like an afterthought, which contrasts strongly with our feelings of disappointment and grief at its reveal. No matter how we may feel, frustrated and upset at such a loss, it is nothing to nature but just another random event, and like Crane says, there aren't any bricks to throw to change that. It might also be the fact, or a case of, the characters just being finished, right? Like they've just had so much grief thrown at them in these last few days, and frustrations and anger, and by now, this last little tragedy, this last little devastation is, they're already broken, they've got nothing left, sort of thing. Long String of Numbers continued, I appreciated how in describing the correspondent's viewpoint while in the water, it didn't feel as if there was a sudden change of focus onto the correspondent, as if to say, the correspondent is now the main character in this section. It felt like a very gradual, natural change of focus, where the correspondent is slowly emphasized more and more during the course of events that I didn't even realize until the correspondent was contemplating the possibility of his death from the current. I consider it a small feature of the story that, although subtle, adds to its impact and effectiveness by making us not think so much of the character alone while we hear his thoughts. We still remain focused on the overall story and experiences of all the men, and on the message of the cold, bizarre indifference of nature. Al-Ann 42 said, I have a lot of questions. Were there other survivors? Is it always that hard to row a boat through the surf? I guess I don't know enough about the sea, because I thought that rowboats were routinely used for crews to get on land from sailing vessels. Does one need to be in a protected harbour or estuary for this to really work? Why do you think Crane included this story on his list? Why do you think Hemingway included this story on his list? Stephen Crane does a great job setting a mood, says Al-Ann 42. It's also compelling storytelling. It will be interesting to see how it compares to other works on the list. What do you think Hemingway learned from this story? The sea is almost a character in this story. Maybe that was an influence on Hemingway. I also wonder whether he learned something from how the pacing worked for this particular story. What Has Happened 22 said, I could understand not going straight to shore during a storm, as it gets so much choppier the closer you get. A much higher chance of being capsized and everyone drowning, but there was an entire day of just staying off shore after the storm, it seems. That guy on shore who was waving at them is described as an idiot by those on the boat, but I'm guessing the guy on shore was like, you idiots, it's not that bad, why are you not coming to the shore? On a side note, I was on a rowing machine this morning at the gym, and due to it being insanely crowded with the new year and all, I never do rowing machines, but 10 minutes on that killed me. Halfway through, I was already mentally saying, "Oh, Billy, will you spell me?" Also, before this story, I never knew spell had the meaning of to take over temporarily for someone. Yeah, those rowing machines are pretty brutal. I'm just thinking about that. 10 minutes on one of those is torture. It really is. But I don't think they were rowing that, you know, that consistently and that hard as you do on those machines. But yeah, day in and day out, I can see that they would have been in agony. Wasm said the water jar was floating, so I imagine they had very little water left, and combined with the exhaustion in a nearby village, it was both the time and place to abandon ship. The man with the halo, I wonder if it's Crane inserting a religious allegory, God saves man from nature, or is it that the man shines like a saint because that's what he is to the men, a long-awaited saviour? This was one of the first short stories I've read in a long time, and I could count how many I have read all in one hand, but it was great. I'm thinking, if I enjoy the Blue Hotel as much, I just might have to look into other writing by Crane, and maybe more short stories in general. My recommendation, my favourite short story of all time, is a Roald Dahl story called Death of an Old, Old Man. I'd recommend reading that one. It's really great. Wasm continued, I like how from the beginning we have this nature's uncaring for the men. The seagulls land on water like it's nothing. The waves throw them around, threatening to sink the ship, despite making it this far. But at the same time, nature can be helpful. The wind pushes them onwards. When they put up a sail, a wave throws the correspondent closer to shore. It's not out to get them, it just is. Right Way Up said yes, the captain made the right call. Considering how little strength the crew had left, when they reached the shore, they maybe wouldn't have made it without the help from the naked man. Favourite moment was when the captain called the correspondent over to the boat, right before the big wave brought the correspondent to waist-high waters. I think that the captain, with all his experience at sea, recognised the coming wave for what it was, a great surfing wave. My first thought was, who died? And after checking back and reading the last paragraphs a few times, I'm still not sure. Not sure that anyone died, really. The still and dripping shape could be the boat. I realise that is kind of far-fetched, since an inanimate object is always still. The captain was my favourite character because of his unselfish, heroic behaviour. Good story, even though it kind of felt weird reading it in such a slow pace. And my final thought, the crew was already dead, and the portion of the story they spent on the dinghy was purgatory. Wow, there's a twist for you. Right Way Up said, I guess I was a tad optimistic on the faith of the oiler. I thought the naked man could have got him just in time and performed the kind of CPR that almost always works in the movies. Oh, that was Right Way Up responding to their own comment, following up on their own comment. Yeah, I think the oiler was definitely dead. There was a line in there that pretty much confirmed it. You know, it's interesting to learn that this was a true story, because earlier on in the podcast, in chapter 3, I think, we were discussing the symbology in the story and trying to figure out what was meant to be symbolism and what wasn't. And we were kind of all the way through wondering things like, for example, you know, are the sharks symbolic of something? Or, you know, the fact that it was nighttime and there was little glimmers of light on the horizon might have symbolized the little spark of hope that remained that they might survive. Those kinds of things. And it could be the case that those details were included, or at least they were written in such a way as to provide deeper meanings, allegories, metaphors, symbolism, that kind of thing. But learning that it's a true story, it might just be that those were just the details of what happened. I am still pretty convinced that there is quite a lot of symbology embedded in this story. But I think maybe not quite as much as we originally thought. It's really one of those questions that you can never truly know for sure what the author meant by every detail that they included. Well, I'll tell you one thing. Now that we've finished book one, hey, let me just tell you that first up, a bit of an announcement, that's it. We've finished book one. We're one down, 15 to go. And I must say, I'm actually really excited to read The Blue Hotel. Out of those two Stephen Crane books, just reading the blurbs of them, The Blue Hotel was the one that sort of piqued my interest a little bit more. I thought it sounded more exciting than The Open Boat. Of course, that, you know, is yet to be seen, but I am definitely, at this point, excited to press on. It's a bit of a funny feeling because I'm really happy, I'm really sort of proud that we've finished our first book. I know it was the smallest book on the whole list, but we finished it. But at the same time, like, I want to analyze it and talk more about it and go deeper into The Open Boat. But I'm so excited to start the next one. So I think I'll wrap up this episode here. And I'm actually going to do two episodes today. This wrap-up episode, so it's a nice sort of neat parcel. You know, all of these episodes are about The Open Boat. And then I'm going to do a second episode for today, which will be the introduction and the first chapter of The Blue Hotel. So I will be seeing you again very shortly. Thank you for listening today. Bye for now.